people from different cultures in Canada, including the Dene, the clan mothers, everyone. It's us working together to achieve a common goal, and that's to end the corruption, the rampant, blatant corruption in Canada.
It's interesting because I've always looked at my life here in Canada thinking that perhaps I was in the better country, and I don't think that so much anymore today. In fact, when I look at the States and I see the Americans standing up for themselves and waking up and rising up, I don't see that sort of movement as much here in Canada. Now, when Norman did his walk on July 1st, I got a glimpse of seeing that here in Canada, and I think other Canadians felt the same way. You know, it really looks like our country is tyrannical and going under a dictatorship in which it's looking like we are actually more of a target than any other country perhaps.
Why is it so important to detox? Toxins are the suspected cause of at least 80% of all disease. They store in your fat cells, making it hard to lose weight, mess with your memory, clarity, and focus, and interfere with your immune system. They disrupt your endocrine systems, affecting your energy, sleep, and quality of life. And worse, they're unavoidable. They're in the food you eat, water you drink, and air you breathe. So I want to introduce you to a miracle element called zeolite. Research shows that zeolite selectively binds to toxins including mercury, lead, cadmium, arsenic, radioactive particles, and volatile organic compounds. Zeolite is at least 100 times more effective than any other detox product on the market. Go to sarahwestall.com under shop and try it today. Patrons receive a $50 free gift card. You won't know how good you can feel until you experience a clean body. Well, and let me ask you, you know, there's a lot of evidence to show the abuses that have been going on against the Indians, the reservations, the children on the Canadian genocide. Are you surprised now that you've digging into this, that the people who would lead a government and ignore those kind of crimes, those are the, you know, it's not surprising that they would abuse other people as well. People who commit that kind of atrocities are going to abuse everybody. And now it's just becoming more obvious.
Yeah, it's becoming more obvious. I'm bringing this to light. I've had threatening letters. That time when I was locked out of the courtroom, another well-dressed woman in a business suit walked up to me and pointed at me, and she said, "You know, they're going to kill you," and walked away. And I don't care. I'm not scared. I refuse to be a slave. You know, I refuse to live in fear. So after my last threatening letter from the city of Mississauga, threatening me with legal action and $25,000 forfeit or something like that, I wrote back to them and I said, "I'm going to tell this story as loud as I can, as much as I can, on every form of media. And if you don't like it, bring it on, bring it." And that's what I wrote. And those are the words I used. And they haven't brought it. You know, I would.
Well, and are you finding a lot of support from other firefighters and police and people in the system who have also encountered incredible abuses at the hands of tyrants, you know, quite frankly? Are you seeing a movement, or are they still scared?
They're still scared to step up? I was contacted by the head of the Ottawa Police Association and through my member of parliament, and he asked if he could meet with me for a half an hour. And 2.5 hours later, he said, "I'm still trying to process all this," you know, because he had 3 of his people commit suicide with guns. And I met with him twice subsequently. He can't really help, but I can help him. And I've been contacted by 2 or 3 firefighters. one story that I think I told you last time. I was at the Erin Fall Fair. Erin's a town I live in. And I had a woman tug on my jacket and said, "Are you Norman Traversy?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "My husband would like to talk to you." And I went over and saw this, you know, shriveled up little guy in a wheelchair, electric wheelchair. And it turned out he was a firefighter that worked with me, fought fires with me, big, robust guy. And he had, like me, been exposed to a number of chemicals. And he had, his body was just riddled with cancer. And he also lost everything. He got no help. And he looked at me and he said, "Norm, go get those bleep bleeps." And he's gone now. He's no longer with us. But I'm acting on his orders that I'm not giving up. I'm going after those so-and-sos. And, you know, I think that's why people like Amina are now part of this movement, because they realize I'm very sincere. We're going to get this done. And so now, after what's happened, it's become a movement. We have contacts all over, and including a lot of Americans that are helping us. And would you like to add to that, Amina?
Yeah, it's a quite a movement, like Norman said, and we're strategically working really hard at finding our way with this. The prosecution itself is working in a judicial system in Canada whereby they don't make it very easy. This system is created for these people. We're not a country, we're a corporation. So, you know, Norman is encountering these roadblocks and these doors shutting on him because this is what they do. These are their tactics. So they will do what they do for themselves, and you know, breaking the law, it seems that way, and assuming that they are, some of them are above the law, like Justin Trudeau, where nobody is. So we are trying to advocate. Now, for me to come in and see this, I saw Norman on TV, on YouTube, on an interview, and I thought, wow, okay, he's talking about some of our human rights here. And, you know, as you know, I'm in the blockchain space, so I'm here trying to help others learn and educate about and being a sovereign soul. And when I heard Norman's case, like yourself, I had compassion, and I felt like we need to help others understand and educate and learn more about what our rights are and if we even have any rights. So I looked for Norman and I found him, and we've been together since, and I learned so much with people that have come up that are not necessarily serving the purpose and more serving themselves. So we've been strategizing. I have a lot of very connected people in my Rolodex. So I was able to, you know, make doors open in ways that I didn't even realize could happen. So there's definitely a movement. Canadians are very pleased to see anything happen. I think there's a desperateness. And, you know, it's just the time in our lives where either you do something and take some action or you don't. And if you don't, then, you know, this new world order is going to take place. And it's this is the seriousness. You know, our country is tyrannical. So I feel I have nothing to lose. And I feel like one day I'll have something to tell my grandchildren that I tried, or I helped, or I assisted, I took action.
And if this new world order comes mm-hmm. about, do you believe this will just be part of what you've gone through, Norman? Do you think this will be everyone? I mean, do you think this is just the glimpse of what everybody is going to have to deal with?
Yeah, I think so. I was in IKEA the other day. And, you know, they come on the loudspeaker and tell you to social distance. What the heck does that mean? I mean, that it doesn't make any...
Well, how many cases you guys even have for something that only really is dangerous to people with comorbidities who are elderly? How many cases do you even have? And, I mean, it's ridiculous. You have 14 times more, according to the research I've done and the studies that are out there now with Rocco Galati that's suing the government. He's telling me that the Canadians are seeing 14 times more people dying from the mandates than from the virus itself. We've had studies here in the United States. There was a historic study that came out with at least 10 times as many deaths. This is using their bloated BS numbers from the CDC that we know is where they're categorizing all sorts of things that were not from the virus, that there's at least 10 times more deaths. South Africa is seeing 20 times more deaths, and they've did a formal study on it. So you guys are it's just BS. But anyways, you said what were these social distancing for? I had to add that. It's for BS. Go ahead.
Well, the phrase that really got me was this announcer at IKEA was saying, and as we learn to accommodate with the new normal, that is a terrifying phrase, new normal.
What, are we supposed to stay away from each other because you guys want to traumatize us all en masse?
Yeah. And I don't know if you want to talk about this, Amina, but Amina was, she had a tough time at IKEA too.
Yeah, there was a lady who was harassing me in the lineup going out the cashier, and she was talking to both Norman and I and saying, why don't we have our masks on? And I said to her, yeah, I was a Karen, and I said, please, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to talk about it. And I kept begging her. I said, please, stop. And I even put my hand up, and I said, please stop, really. And I said, just carry on with your transaction, please, and carry on with your day. And she wouldn't, and she kept going on, and she was a total Karen. And then eventually Norman called her a Nazi, and then he went off and said, I'm going to go buy some Swedish meatballs. And I said, please don't leave me right now, Norman. So he carried on, but she continued, and I knew she was going to continue. She was triggered, and this is what happens. I think they get triggered. And even though it's part of the hypnosis, really. So she carried on, and when she left, she said, bye, Karen. And I thought, wow, I wasn't even the Karen. So I said to her really loudly, bye, Karen, where most people could hear me. Well, she didn't like that, so she pulled out her camera and started videotaping me. And I just continued with my transaction. And the cashier at first thought we were friends because we were kind of laughing in the beginning. And then she realized it wasn't so. So she called security. And they called security and they tried to find her as she was exiting the building to tell her that she couldn't do that and talk to the customers like that.
Oh, excellent.
So, yeah, it was really good. It was great. I was really pleased with IKEA and how they handled it. Another lady came up and approached me and she said to me, she apologized continuously. She just kept saying, I'm really so sorry you had to go through this. You know, we're going to deal with it. I hope the security found her. I'm sorry. They just kept saying they were sorry over and over. But, you know, this is a representation of Sweden, where they have taken great measures to ensure that they didn't have high numbers and they didn't do the lockdowns like we did. So I would assume their economy must be doing fairly okay if they didn't do the lockdown the way we did.
What was it? Is there a mandate in where you're at to wear masks?
We do have to wear masks. There's a bylaw, and it is there's two exemptions. One is if you have a medical exemption, and one is if you physically cannot put the mask on. So, you know, these are bylaws, and this is where, you know, we need to learn about our true common laws, which is our lawful rights. And this is where I'm learning a little bit more about that, which is so important because rules, these are not laws. And it's important to follow common law. It's important to follow your lawful right because we do have lawful rights. And, you know, I want to say that I'm not here to speak against people who wear masks. I am here for justice for Canada, justice for all. It's really important. You know, whether you wear a mask or not, it's important to just learn and understand and start asking questions. You know, I respect those who want to wear it because
they've been brainwashed.
They're exactly. And they might think that of me. And, you know, really, at the end of the day, we all have the same vision.
I got to say this.
Yeah.
When the death is so low and so much less than the flu for
Absolutely.
The average person, who's
Yeah.
been brainwashed. And, you know, I just, we're in this really weird time where people are, I've had multiple Karen stories myself where I just, I mean, multiple. It's, I just the other day I had another one and a man came up to me and thanked me for standing up for my rights. And, you know, it's very difficult to be the person who is essentially verbally assaulted for not wearing a mask, because I've been having that issue. But regardless, you're making this movement. I want to talk about what this movement really is. You've been protesting, and how many people have been coming out for this protest, and how many more are you aiming for? Because we need to see protests in mass, not violent, but protests en masse for our rights and make them realize how serious we are that these rights are ours. They're not yours. We have the right of self-determination. You might need to join up with the Republic of Canada and say, if you claim that I am your employee or some other BS, you own me, then I am gonna go for my right of self-determination and I am not gonna be part of this. I'm going to be part of a real republic that views me as a human being with rights that has been given to me by God or whatever, every normal. I'm not any different than these a-holes that claim that they run everything. They don't put the same restrictions on them. They just put it on you. The people at top, they don't mind those restrictions. They don't see you as relevant. And and maybe at some point you say, okay, I'm going to exercise my rights of self-determination if you're not going to acknowledge those rights.
Again, common law, like learn it. Let's learn our rights. Let's learn what they are. Let's y learn what we can actually use that will work.
Then the people that don't get it, the masses who are brainwashed to think that they are, I don't know. I mean, I don't even, they're like children. I had, John Paul Rice, you know who he is. He's a friend of mine. And after my first Karen story, I was very upset and I called him. This was months ago. And he said, you know what, Sarah, this helped me probably more than almost anything anybody said to me. That's exactly what I needed to hear at the right time. He even apologized for talking too much, but no, John, you don't understand. He told me the right thing at the right time. And he told me that, Sarah, they're like children. And it's not any different than your 10-year-old. You got to look at them like with love, but they don't understand. They just don't understand the
That's right.
concepts. And it's like a 10-year-old that doesn't understand. And at some point, we cannot do it for them. And if they cannot stay with us, we have to at least get the rights for ourselves and for our family, for the people who do understand. And if they choose not to join in, we'll do what we can for them, but there's not much we can do.
We have to lead the way at some point. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And it's, we have this conversation. Those who think differently have their conversation and are saying we are the children. But, I think the numbers speak volumes when you said that, the numbers are very high for COVID cases. The numbers are very low for deaths, and they're not reporting the deaths. And this is important.
What in what world and what planet would we be the children? What don't we understand? Because we're looking at the science, we're looking at the information. I'm a scientist by training. I devoured that information. I know what the truth is on all this stuff. I know what all the past diseases, I know the truth on when it comes to climate change. CO2 is not our enemy. All these things, this I've been reading what the central bankers are doing. So who is the child here? Because when I talk to those people who think I'm ignorant, they don't understand any of those political situations, no policy decisions. All they talk about is their need to get along socially with others. But they're very clueless on any policy. They don't understand central banking. They don't understand how the world is structured. They don't understand disease and what's really going on with COVID. They have no idea on policies. They have no idea on common law or human rights. So when you look at all that stuff, who really is the child here? And so I don't give them that level of respect saying, well, you know, they have their view. We have, no, wait a minute. No, I know that we're going in the right direction and they're very ignorant. And I will not give them that view. I do give others that view if they are that well-read and they are looking at policies, they are looking at central bankers, and then they disagree with me. I'm all into that. I really want those conversations because I want to learn.
I absolutely agree with that. It's a fine line and careful wording when we speak because they have us so divided and so under hypnosis that when we talk and these trigger words, they are trigger words, you know, create the animosity and the conflict like I had in IKEA, like Norman and I had in IKEA. So that is, I agree with you. I completely agree with you.
It's a psyop. It is. They're taking ignorant people and getting their emotions going. And yeah. Our goal is to educate them. And if we can't educate them, then we can only do so much because they're going to learn either now the easy way or they're going to learn the hard way through horrifying tyranny.
Exactly. There was a KGB agent that spoke in 1984. I can't remember his name. And he said it in four stages that they are going to unveil. And they've done it, and you can see it. And he said, number one is dehumanizing. Number two is destabilizing, which they're doing right now with the shutting down of everything. And number three is a crisis. And number four is normal, when they call it normal. So we know this is how, this has been, like, you can see this has happened. And he even stated, this is back in 1984, and he even stated that even if you were to show them the concentration camps, even if you were to prove it to them, they will not believe you. So, somebody has to take the lead at some point, because if they're not going to believe even the proof right in front of their face, what do you do? What do we do?
I don't know. It's almost like they're on a different planet. They're very brainwashed. It's very strange and it's very weird. It's like looking at the color red and they see yellow. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's very strange.
Hypnosis. Yeah.
So
I got a couple of things. Yeah. First, the great American philosopher Ayn Rand said that these abuses require the mandate of the victim. And that's what we're looking at right here. The victims are giving their mandate to the abuse.
Yeah.
The Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd like to bring up is a movie also made in the 80s called They Live. Have you seen that?
No, but you know, I've had multiple guests tell me I should watch that movie. And so now I really do need to watch it. But they bring that up as an example.
Yeah. It was Rowdy Roddy Piper. He was a Canadian wrestler. And this was his movie debut, and it is so much like what's going on now in that movie. And you know, he's got these sunglasses that he finds, and when he looks at an advertisement for a car or something, a billboard, when he puts the sunglasses on, it says obey. And
yes, that's what they're telling me. They're using that example. So, okay, what do you need? What do you want people who are in Canada or because you're saying you're working with a lot of people in the U.S. too. What are you looking for? What are you trying to do? I've heard that the administration in the United States would help you if more people in Canada actually woke up. They need the people behind this before they can really get behind something, because if the people aren't behind it, it's too hard to make change. So you guys are trying to get more people behind you. And there's a lot of people sitting on the fence. There's a lot of people watching.
Do you want to say something, Norman?
I want to say there's a lot of people who are watching on the sidelines eating popcorn who need to get involved. So give your spiel.
Go ahead, Amina.
Well, I would say that it's a very important time in our existence as human beings to come together and rise up. We need to rise up together. Again, no matter what your view is, we have a vision at the end of the day that's the same. And we do want a sovereign world, a sovereign life, and we want it back. We want our integrity back of our country. So we need to come together. We need to be able to hear each other. We need to be able to listen to each other, but we need to take leadership in taking our country back. So it's, you know, I don't know what else to say, but I know Norman and I are going to be traveling, and we want to travel across the country as long as this country is going to let us without a lockdown. And we want to bring to Canadians a parliamentary petition that we are starting, and we'd like for everyone to sign it and take action. And taking action that is going to allow us to unite and come together and communicate and connect, because the connecting of ourselves is really important. And this social distancing, social isolation is keeping us apart. And this is not what we need. We need to come together. So I ask that of all Canadians. I ask for justice for all Canadians. I ask for justice for all human beings, because we're all connected worldwide. And this is a world issue, which has never been before, where every human is going through the exact same experience. So, you know, this petition, as some of people may think, that it may not do anything or it may not be effective, but what it will do is bring us together. It will make us unite and take action. And like you said, Sarah, you know, get off your couch, even if it's getting up and signing this petition, coming out, meeting us if we're in your area, if we make it there. It's action and consciousness. We need to raise our consciousness. It's the most important thing right now. So I will leave it there.
Very good. And the word networking, that's a very important tool that we're using. And the more people we can get into the network, the bigger the movement becomes. And it feels like we're at a tipping point. And I'm very optimistic. I'm not pessimistic at all. You know, it just seems when we need something, it shows up. When we need someone, he or she shows up. And we're the White Hats.
Absolutely. Well, do you have a website or anywhere that they can reach out to you?
Yes, justiceforcanada.ca. So they can go there to see what the movement's all about, where and how to download the petition. It's not up yet, but it will be. We're just getting that together. It's going to be up there with instructions. They can download it. They can get signatures and mail, forward it to that mailing address. And also as to where we're going to be when we travel, our locations. So again, it'll be up there. So justiceforcanada.ca. And if they want any video updates, also on the site, which will lead them to my channel, Amina M, on YouTube. And there is a GoFundMe account on the website, because we are raising money. It is costly with lawyers, travel, just whatever we need to do. The legal part of it, it's very costly. So, but we thank everybody, even the comments, just the encouragement, support. We thank everyone. We're so grateful for Canadians. We have such good hearts, and just want to see that grow. So thank you. Thank you, Sarah, for doing this.
This was a really great example of what you're dealing with. Can you, Norman, Traversey, you know, Amina tells me that your family is very known in Canada. Can you give us a quick background of your family? And which is helping your cause grow so quickly. Us in the United States, and I have a wide international audience. They probably aren't as familiar with your family name.
Okay. My family, my ancestor, Noel Langlois, came over from Normandy in France, not far from where the D-Day was, you know, Juno Beach, and very, very close to there. They came over in the first boatload full of Frenchmen that tried to colonize North America. And he had a farm at what is now Quebec City. And he married the woman next door after she was widowed. And he owned the Plains of Abraham. And the planes, so he came over in 1635, about the same time as the Mayflower. And so my family would be like a Mayflower family. And he ended up with the Plains of Abraham. The Plains of Abraham was where there was a battle that the British won. It was during the Seven Years' War. And then that land became British and part of the Crown land. And then later on, a couple more of my ancestors, Radisson and Grosselier, they founded the Hudson Bay Company. And the Hudson Bay Company, and that was founded, I believe, 1667, with a charter from Charles II of England. And the Hudson Bay Company, founded by my ancestors, owned all the land of any rivers or waters that drained into Hudson Bay, which is pretty well two-thirds of Canada, what is now Canada. And the company became fabulously wealthy, the biggest landowner in the world. And that was my family. We were originally Langlois, but there were so many Langlois that they started having D names. So it was Langlois de Traversy, which means Langlois called Traversy. And so then we dropped the Langlois D. My name is actually Norman Langlois de Traversy. And the family, besides starting the Hudson Bay Company in 1837, we had a revolt, and it was modeled on the American Revolution. And it was a revolt against the corruption in Lower Canada, which is now called Quebec, and Upper Canada, which is now called Ontario. And both revolutions failed. Otherwise, we'd be either a part of the United States or just like the United States. And one of the leaders of that Lower Canada revolt was Toussaint Traversy. And they threw him in jail and they were going to hang him. But because he had all that Hudson Bay money, he was a wealthy man, they said, okay, we'll fine you £1,000, which in 1837 was a king's ransom. And you and your family are banished from Quebec. And so he moved across the river to Ottawa, Ontario. And the family's been based here since 1837. We helped build the Basilica, which is downtown. Traversy's had businesses in Ottawa since 1837. And so it's in my blood to go after corruption. And that's my family.
Well, that's great. Maybe the right person at the right time to lead a movement. And same with you, Amina. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my grandfather was a visionary and a freedom fighter in South Africa in the 60s. So I was raised very much in a mindset like that. I'm a visionary myself. So there's reason for it. I see that. I do.
Well, that's excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And hopefully this will help spark more people to join your movement and maybe give people inspiration around the world to start their own, because that's what we need to do. And thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.